Beyond the Beauty is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Bobby Brown.
I think it's so amazing that a doctor, a respected doctor who has, you know, quite a history of working in some of the best hospitals, gone to the best schools, decided that what he was doing, his profession, was not helping people and not working for him. So I love the story that Dr. Marvin Singh decided that he needed to do things differently, that he just said, this is not working. He first personally decided he wanted to change his lifestyle, his habits, and how he treated people. And he lost 45 pounds by doing the things that he's teaching people to do. And what I love about him most is when I got him on the phone, we discussed everything that was going on with me, and he just has a way of simply explaining how and why that you can improve some of your symptoms. And I think that that approach to wellness is something that more people need to hear. He's also an author, a podcast host, and one of the few board-certified integrative gastroenterologists in America. Here's our conversation. So I'm so happy to talk to you, and I'm really so happy to meet you, Marvin.
Likewise.
Yeah, I mean, I should call you Dr. Singh.
No, that's kind Marvin's
of,
good.
All right. A lot of people don't really know this about me, but I'm kind of weird. I do things, like, not the way everyone else does. And how I met you, I'll tell you where I was. I was actually on a little boat in Sag Harbor with my son, my 21-year-old driving, and my husband co-captaining. And I had a podcast on because, you know, it was bumpy, and I just— that's what I do. And I was listening to you being interviewed on Broken Brain, the podcast. And then I guess I commented to you guys. I don't even know how I actually talked to you.
I think I saw the comment and I just said thanks or something like that back. And then we started talking.
Tell us your story, because you're a board certified gastroenterologist.
That's right. I was very traditionally conservatively trained doctor, you know, University of Michigan for my residency, Scripps Clinic for my GI training. And my first job was assistant professor at Johns Hopkins. So, you know, that's a big university academic institution, everything kind of by the books or writing the books, as they would say. After that, I kind of felt a little lost in how I practice medicine. You know, we do a really good job at taking care of people when they're sick, when they're in the hospital, when they're bleeding, or when they have cancer. You know, we were able to have a lot of technology that we can diagnose things and treat things. But that was just a really small subset of the people that we actually take care of on an ongoing basis. And these are the people that, you know, kept coming to the office with the same complaints over and over again, and just kind of getting shuffled from doctor to doctor to doctor. And I think about things and reflect a lot of self-reflection. And I was almost questioning my ability as a physician. I was thinking, maybe it's me. I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be a doctor. Actually, I remember vividly telling my wife, maybe we should just open a bagel shop or something like that. Maybe we should just
make more people sick.
Yeah, right. So, you know, and my wife had always been more of the open-minded type of person compared to me, more conservative. And so she said, why don't you look into integrative medicine? Maybe that's kind of the answer you're looking for. And I kind of dismissed it immediately, said, I don't know, this is too much. I don't think this is what's going to be the solution. And she was a little insistent on it and bought me this book called Integrative Gastroenterology, because that's my field. I'm a gastroenterologist. And so I looked at it, flipped through it, and I found it really super interesting.
Who wrote it?
It's a Andrew Weil series book, and Jerry Mullen was the editor of the book. And I said, you know, Jerry is one of my friends from Johns Hopkins, because we were there together. I emailed him, and then we talked, and he said, I told him about the situation, kind of what I was feeling and thinking, and he said, you know, you really should look into the Integrative Medicine Fellowship at the University of Arizona. So I looked into it and I decided, you know what? Let's go for it. You just, you know, take the plunge. It was kind of a risk.
You quit your job?
No. I while working full time, I basically put myself through school again. It's a 2-year fellowship training program. So you work all day and come home and go upstairs and read until like midnight, you know.
And so it's done all digital?
A lot of it is digital. You have to go to Arizona about 3 times in the course of the fellowship for a week to meet all the faculty and interact with Dr. Weil and things like that.
Cool.
When I went for my first week, it was like total breath of fresh air blown into me. Like I was learning about nutrition. I was doing Tai Chi at sunrise in the Arizona desert. And, you know, it was just things that I would never have imagined ever doing in my life. And when I came home, I was like just totally rejuvenated. I was excited. I started integrating some of these concepts of nutrition and lifestyle into my own practice, into our home. And very quickly, within like 3 months, I started just dropping the weight. I wasn't even really planning to lose weight. It wasn't like my intention, but that's just kind of what happened.
Did you always have a weight problem or was it a slow build?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a doctor, you think you're kind of eating healthy, things are okay. But I think in my fellowship, I started to realize that I had a problem because I was over 200 pounds and my liver enzymes were elevated and I had fatty liver. But I thought I was doing everything okay, you know, have a sandwich and bag of chips and a Coke Zero for lunch.
But
I mean,
how do you
that's
think
healthy,
that's
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, who told you that was okay?
We don't know. I mean, that's what we think is okay. Oh, I'm not drinking Coke. I'm drinking Coke Zero. I'm having a sandwich, not a slice of pizza. You know, that's kind of,
right. That's
how we think. You think that's, you know, that's good. That's how a lot of people think. And it's really eye-opening when you actually understand what real nutrition is. They don't really teach us too much about this kind of stuff in school or residency or fellowship.
So take me through like a normal day, like what you eat.
When I'm at home, these days, usually I'm doing intermittent fasting. So in the morning, I'm really not eating anything. I might have a black coffee or green tea or something like that. And then at lunchtime, I have a huge salad.
So what, you don't eat from how many hours?
Usually about 16 hours. So by sometimes even less than that, my window is even tighter because it depends on the schedule at work, whether I have time to eat at 10 or 11 o'clock or I just wait till lunchtime.
And you're not starving?
No. It takes a little bit of some getting used to. Actually, the other day I did a 24-hour fast just to kind of, you know, rejuvenate myself. And I wasn't hungry at all until I ate. It was just, it's weird. I mean, your body just kind of adapts to that. Just like you think you're never going to be able to eat asparagus because it's just not something you grew up eating. But once you start eating asparagus, you find that that's the only thing you can think about. You crave it.
So your first meal is usually around noon?
Usually around noon, maybe a little bit before that, depending on the schedule.
Okay, and what's your salad? Do you bring it from home? Do you get it from where you
bring it from home, yeah. My wife is very kind and makes my lunch for me every day.
Wow. So tell me what she puts in your salad.
She'll vary it sometimes, but it'll be some romaine with maybe some mixed greens in there as well, carrots, cucumbers, bell peppers, onions. We'll put some flax or hemp seeds in there. And usually her nut of choice is pecans because she loves pecans. Sometimes she'll put walnuts because I like walnuts a little bit better. And then the dressing is like a olive oil and balsamic mix. So just very simple.
So no protein for lunch?
Not usually. Sometimes she might have a hard-boiled egg in there. Even that salad with an egg might be like too much for me.
See, I'm such a crunch person. Like I just found some gluten-free Gigi crackers, and I'm like so happy. So you don't need like a piece of toast, a piece of bread,
no.
Rice, quinoa.
The romaine is the crunch, I guess.
For you, okay. And then when do you eat again?
Dinner at
dinner.
Home.
So you eat nothing?
No snacks.
The salad, and then you eat dinner. And what's your dinner?
Dinner depends on, I guess, what the kids are feeling, but often that may be the time when we have meat, if we have meat, and there'll be a bunch of vegetables there as well.
And then after dinner, you're done?
Done.
No fruit, no dessert?
I might have some berries with some cinnamon sprinkle on top. That's kind of like my specialty dessert. And once in a while, I'll have an organic piece of dark chocolate if I feel like it.
That's just the like, it's so clean, but it's so kind of like you're missing all this good stuff.
Well, it's plenty of good stuff there.
Yeah, but I mean like, like if you went to France, would you eat the French bread?
Probably.
You would. Okay. And you are now in New York and you did admit that you had Chinese food last night.
I did.
Was it worth it?
Today, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But last night, it was worth it.
Yeah.
I'm a huge believer in flexibility and adaptability. Otherwise, you're just... it's hard to function. You see these people at, you know, parties and things like that where they're like, no, I can't eat that. I can't eat that. I strongly believe that part of being alive and healthy and well is in enjoying life as well. So it's more important what you do most of the time than what you do once in a while. So like my famous saying is that you should eat cake on your birthday. It's good to eat cake on your birthday. You should celebrate your birthday. Just don't eat cake every day. That's when you have a problem.
And you don't think you'll ever incorporate breakfast?
I do. I mean, actually today I had steel cut oatmeal with berries on top, mainly because the lady in the hotel told me that you could not just sit and drink coffee.
Because some people say, don't eat oatmeal. Like I feel like there's experts out there that are constantly telling you what not to do.
Yeah.
You can't have oatmeal. You can't have eggs. You should have egg whites. No, you should only eat eggs.
Yeah.
I think it's so complicated out there.
Yeah. You know why? There's only one expert on this planet that exists.
You.
It's you.
Yeah.
Everybody is totally different. I mean, there was even a study earlier this year where they looked at 30 some odd people, I think 34, 32 people, and they followed them for 17 days and they checked their microbiome every day. And what they determined was that within each individual, you could predict what changes in the microbiome might occur based on what foods they were going to eat, but that was not generalizable across the entire group of people. So if I ate broccoli, I might have five different changes in my microbiome that might produce five chemical changes in my body, and you might have five different changes in your microbiome that might produce five different chemical changes in your body from eating the same broccoli, and I might be good and you might be bad. We're only 10 to 20% similar in our gut microbiome.
So explain to me, this whole gut microbiome has exploded over the past couple of years. Like 5 years ago, we didn't know what it was. Yeah, we took, you know, Acidophilus because we heard we should.
Yeah.
So how do you know that your gut is healthy? And there's all these now doctors that are coming out with these cleanses that are, you know, you got to remove all the bad things and then replace. Like, what do you think about all that?
I think the one thing that we all agree on is you got to remove the bad things and put in the good things. It's what exactly is the good thing for your body that is dependent on you individually. The bad things that we all universally agree on are like, you know, the vegetable oils, the fried foods, the saturated fat, the hydrogenated fat, all those kind of things, you know, processed, packaged food. We all agree that those are not good. And then what kind of diet pattern do you follow to optimize your gut health? That's the tricky part, because a lot of this health and wellness stuff has been highly marketed for certain belief systems. Mm-hmm. And so you find certain pockets of people, you know, following one direction or another, and there's a lot of marketing behind that. And people are generally lost because they don't really know what's best for them. They see, oh, this guy, you know, he wrote a good book and he sells these products, so I'm going to try that just because I like what he has to say. Maybe that's what I have to do. And they follow based on that. They're not really following necessarily based on them or listening to what their body is saying. And everybody is so different.
But how do you find out what your body needs?
That's what I love helping people figure out. So I started this clinic called Precision Clinic. And we do really in-depth analysis of people's bodies, their microbiome, food sensitivity testing, chemical sensitivities, whole body imaging, brain imaging, heart imaging, all these kind of things. And I put it all together. If I was going to do you, we would go through all the testing. And then on a day like a Saturday when I'm not working, you know, seeing patients in the office, I'll literally block off 6 to 8 hours. And I'll be sitting there looking at Bobby's results and analyzing everything and creating like an executive summary. Then I sit down and I say, based on your genes and based on what your microbiome is saying and based on your leaky gut analysis and all this, I think this is how you should eat. I think these are the things you should avoid. This is a way to clean up your environment. This is how you should exercise. And we kind of go through all this step by step. And then I kind of guide them through the process. This is very overwhelming to get all this information as well. So it's important to have somebody to kind of guide them through it.
But for most people, if they're not in San Diego, they don't have access to you. They don't have the money to pay for it because insurance, I'm sure, doesn't cover most of those things. How does a normal person become healthier versions of themselves?
I think if you were to say you're like stuck on an island, but you have all the food and all the resources, but you have no doctors and no tests even. Some of the tests are actually becoming much more affordable because as the technology advances and they're able to do things quicker, then the cost goes down. If you look at sequencing the whole genome, when the Clinton administration had Craig Venter do that for the first time, I think it was like $100 million. And now you can get a whole genome sequencing done for like $3,000. So you say $3,000 is a lot of money, but it's not $100 million. And
right.
in the coming years, it may be $300. I don't know. You know.
And what kind of information does that give you?
So it'll show you, you know, what diseases you may have risk for, how your body may process certain things like caffeine, and if you have a risk for hypertension or heart attack based on that, and salt intake, and kind of helps you understand your risk so that you can understand how to live for the future.
So if it tells you you can't drink coffee and you love coffee.
Uh-huh.
You have to quit?
It tells you there's this particular gene we're talking about regarding coffee. I actually have that gene, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's probably my worst gene.
And you drink coffee.
I drink coffee, but you're allowed 200 milligrams of caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like 2 cups of coffee, which is not bad. I mean,
which
usually
isn't,
I have
no.
one or two cups.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I actually, I always did notice, never knew why, that if I ever pushed to have a third cup of coffee, just historically over the last many years, I would get a headache or I'd start feel jittery. And when I did the gene test on myself, I figured, well, that's probably why, because I don't metabolize the caffeine that well. And so that jitteriness is just my body saying
enough.
It's enough.
But I think, you know, someone like me who's very in touch with what happens when I eat certain foods, and because my body is not as clean as yours, but it's cleaner than most people, when I do something that's not on my okay list, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
I think because either I'm more sensitive or I just notice. So I have a double espresso every morning. I'm fine. If I ever have a cup of coffee in the afternoon, I instantly yawn and feel tired, and I don't feel well.
Huh.
So I don't need the test. I just don't drink that cup of coffee.
Exactly. So that was actually going to be my point where we were talking about being on the island with all the resources and food, but no doctor or tests. Really, the best doctor that you have access to is your body. Your body will do the best job that it can under your circumstances and in your environment if you help it as best as you can by listening to what it needs. And a lot of the times we're not tuned into our bodies. We're listening to somebody else, what somebody else is experiences with regards to their body. But that's how we as humans are kind of programmed to think that, oh, well, this guy did this, so I'm going to do
right.
this, and I'm going to get healthy too. So there's a lot of stuff that you can figure out that you couldn't figure out from a test even also. So actually, in my consultations, the first visit is actually a test, I tell everybody, because we sit and talk for 90 minutes. And there's no test on the planet that can really replace the conversation. And so just talking to somebody and learning about their life and their background, how they grew up, what their stressors are, there's no test that can tell you that information. And so that's actually the first part of the puzzle.
Well, it's kind of your like health coach on top of being a doctor.
Exactly.
So is your practice now mostly gastro? Is it weight loss? Like, where are you in your...
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Okay. You must drive your wife crazy.
Like, I know. It's like, I don't know where I am some days or not.
Yeah.
So I have a regular gastro practice where I do colonoscopies and endoscopies just like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And this precision clinic is a second practice that I started.
So the diagnosis like leaky gut, SIBO, all of those other ones, are they real? And why do people get SIBO?
Yeah, I think they're all real. I think they're all manifestations of a similar spectrum of problem. And that problem is called dysbiosis, or an imbalance in the gut microbiome. And why there's an imbalance in the gut microbiome could be due to a number of factors. Some of the common things, alcohol, smoking, other toxins, diet choices, stress, not sleeping enough or well enough, not exercising, you know, all of these kind of things that sound really basic when you say them, but it's not a basic process that happens inside the body. It's actually very complicated and simple at the same time. That's actually the more and more I start reading and learning about things over the last several years, the more fascinated I become with the human body. I mean, if you look at all the studies on how to improve your DNA health, how to improve your gut health, how to improve your mitochondrial health, all these are like the big buzzwords out mm-hmm. there. And you look at what all the common factors are with regards to how to optimize each of these areas, it's the same kind of stuff. There's nothing special. You could read a book on mitochondrial health and they might tell you to take a couple of different maybe supplements, but the general basic principles are the same as for gut health and for DNA health. And what we're doing is basically scientifically proving now that all of these various different kinds of lifestyle elements help optimize these different parts of your body.
And so where one program will say, okay, you should eat broccoli, you should have onions, it's got good prebiotics. But then if you have SIBO, they tell you to follow a FODMAP diet.
Yeah.
So it's complicated for most of us out there.
Yeah. That's why listening to your body and seeing what symptoms you have when you eat particular kinds of foods is important. Just because you may have SIBO or bloating now, and it might be a good idea to avoid the FODMAP foods now, doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it would have to be forever.
Because from what I understood, if you follow a FODMAP diet, it takes away the symptoms, but it doesn't get rid of the SIBO. So people probably don't know what SIBO is.
So yeah. SIBO, as S-I-B-O, stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So we have trillions and trillions of bacteria in our gut microbiome. And majority of them live in the colon, but they do live in all parts of our GI tract. And when there's an overgrowth or an imbalance of these bacteria in our small intestine, which is about 20 feet long, then we start feeling symptoms, bloating. Sometimes people have diarrhea or constipation or a mix of both. That's largely a result of fermentation that these bacteria do of the food that you're eating. And so foods that are highly fermentable are some of these FODMAP foods that we're talking about. A lot of these are very healthy, like cabbage and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and
avocado.
Things like that. Yeah, even avocado. Yeah. And so these are all health foods we talk about. So people will go and say, well, you know, I'm going to eat all these foods. You're telling me that they're good to eat. I'm going to eat plant-based, but I can't eat any of these plant-based foods because I have these symptoms. Avoiding the foods that you know cause you a problem and then addressing the actual cause of the SIBO, and then trying to slowly, sequentially reintroduce some of these foods may be able to kind of help bring balance back. And that's kind of what I work on. It's a process. It's not something that you can take one magic pill and overnight, you know, you're miraculously cured.
Why not? Come on, just come up with some kind of magic pill. It'd be so much easier.
It's because the body is simple and complicated. There's a lot of things going on at the same time. So, you know, your SIBO could be caused by not sleeping well.
Or alcohol.
And alcohol and being stressed.
Right.
A lot of those three things go together.
I sleep well. And the other things I can't promise.
You can say, well, I stopped eating FODMAPs, so why do I still have symptoms? Well, it's because that's just part of the process.
Right.
That's not the entire process. And that's actually the hard part because it involves behavior change.
But I think that I am so much better than I was before, and I don't know if it's anything I did except a mindset. I said to myself, just eat the best possible food you could eat, listen to yourself, and don't feel bad about, you know, what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that has helped me a lot. Like, I feel a lot better than I did when I, you know, was crying to you on the phone. I just said, you know what, enough. If my stomach hurts, it's because I'm making myself crazy. And I don't know, I think I've willed myself into feeling better.
Yeah, I strongly believe that too. I mean, sometimes if you just put yourself in the right mindset, take some deep breaths, do that 4-7-8 breath that Dr. Weil teaches, you just kind of rebalance yourself because your body listens to all of these messages. It's very, very cool and fascinating at the same time.
So Dr. Weil is a mentor?
Definitely,
for you.
Yeah.
I met him once years ago. You know, tell me what he means to you and tell me what he's like.
He's a really gentle guy, very, very soft-spoken, very smart, intelligent. It's almost just listening to him walk you through a meditation practice is surreal. It's very peaceful. He's actually the one on the fellowship the first week, the one that actually teaches you through the 4-7-8 breath.
But his eating, he eats.
Uh-huh.
Like, he eats normal. He doesn't do intermittent fasting. right?
I don't know about intermittent fasting. I don't know whether he eats meat or not, actually.
He eats regular meals. I mean, uh-huh. I've been to his restaurants. Uh-huh. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you have one in San Diego?
We have two. Yeah.
We don't have any in New York yet, but really? You know, when you sit down at these restaurants, they're called True Food Kitchen. They have one in Chicago where my sister lives. The flax crackers, you know, are the best things. I don't know why he doesn't just put those in a box and sell them. They're so good. And because they don't serve bread at the restaurant. Yeah. But they do serve alcohol. You can get a cocktail because he does teach. I don't know. Won't say moderation because he's not saying, you know, go eat French fries. But, yeah. You know, maybe if you bake sweet potato fries. But he teaches you like a better version of regular food.
Exactly. So if you take a high quality ingredient versus a low quality ingredient of the same food, it's different. You get a different nutrient profile. It tastes better. It's healthier for you. Even something as simple as an apple. Have you ever compared just a regular apple and an organic apple or broccoli? Even just looking at it, smelling it as you cut it, it's a different food.
Mm. So sometimes when I'm at a restaurant, I usually order off the restaurant. I eat out a lot, which probably is, you know, not the best thing. And I usually order off the menu. I just say, give me a piece of grilled fish, nothing on it, steamed vegetables. But sometimes when everyone's looking at the menu, I kind of play a game with myself. I'm like, okay, if it wasn't fattening, I wouldn't get a headache or a stomach ache. I wouldn't feel gross. What would I eat?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the truth is I would probably get a cheeseburger and fries or, you know, or I would get, you know, I don't like French toast, but I would get something where I usually make my choices on what's not going to make me feel bad.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've turned it into, you know, what I believe in, but I realize there are some people that could eat things and not get affected by them.
Mm-hmm. How is it affecting them? Maybe
yeah.
they don't get indigestion. Maybe they
don't get
heartburn. Maybe they don't gain weight, but maybe the lipopolysaccharides in their body start shooting through the roof and the CRP starts going up and they don't really know that in the background they're brewing this inflammatory storm inside of their body. And one day it will show up in one form or another.
Of a disease or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this chronic disease or chronic inflammation we talk about all the time. It's another buzzword.
Yes, there's so many buzzwords out there. Yes. So I think your job is to try to figure out how to help people and de-buzz.
And navigate through life, basically, yeah. because no matter what, no matter how good you are or how perfect you think you are, there is always, I guarantee it, going to be a time when there's a problem and you're going to get derailed. Whether it's you were in a car accident, somebody, you know, bumped into you from behind, or whether you tripped and broke your ankle, or God forbid if a loved one passes away. We're not invincible. We're humans. Life is going to happen no matter what. That's something that we have no control over. You can listen to the cues that your body tells you. Then you can kind of navigate through this time period. And these tough times pass, and then you can regroup after that.
And so what advice would you have for the people that are listening and who knows where they are and, you know, where they're working and they don't know what to do? Like, where do people start?
By reflecting on what's going on in your life and just ask yourself a simple question. Say I have, you know, all these issues and problems to deal with right now. Say I fast forward 1 year into the future and all those problems are gone. Just, I feel like $1 million. I look like $1 million. I'm on top of the world. Then sit down with a piece of a paper and a pen and write down for yourself the story. How did you get from point A to point B? Therein is probably the outline to your lifestyle plan.
That's really good, simple advice.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a speed round.
Okay.
Besides this week, what's the last time you derailed and what did you eat?
Probably my son's birthday party last month. There was nothing meal-wise, so I ate a slice of pizza.
And how'd you feel?
I was fine.
It was good, though.
I mean, I think it's part of American culture, you know. I don't know how you could live in this country and not eat pizza in some form or another. Very rarely do I eat pizza. Very rarely do I have, like, you know, a greasy cheeseburger or French fries or something
Coke Zero.
Like that. I don't touch that anymore. If I feel like having something bubbly, I'll have like San Pellegrino. That's my new obsession, I guess.
Do you have a cocktail of choice?
What I like to do if I'm going to have a cocktail is maybe get some vodka and put with San Pellegrino. I don't drink like the soda water or anything like that. And, you know, I've been known to have a glass of scotch once in a while. Not a glass, but, you know, a drink.
A glass. Yeah.
Not a whole glass.
Well, you say a glass of scotch. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as, you know, you're not abusing it or you have a problem or you're drinking a bottle or half a bottle all the time. Your body, I think it's actually good to kind of stress the body with a little bit of these things once in a while as well. Interestingly, I do have a gene that says that I have I think 60 or 66% reduced risk of heart disease if I drink 2 drinks a day.
Wow, you're so lucky.
That's a good gene.
Yeah, that's a really good gene.
And I don't even drink 2 drinks a day,
yeah,
ever.
Well, maybe you should. Maybe it'll be better for your health.
So if I have a drink once in a while, I don't feel so bad about it anymore.
And what do you do to fall asleep at night?
Usually I fall asleep pretty easily. I don't have a hard time falling asleep. What will knock me out in like a second is I'll just lie down and I'll do deep breathing exercises. Sometimes I may put on headphones and listen to like a guided meditation, but I don't do that really much anymore. In the earlier days when I was first learning about these kind of things and seeing how it affects me, I would do that. But these days I just, if I say, okay, I'm going to do 4-7-8 breath, for example, I don't even think I make it to 8 breaths. I'm done. I'm already asleep.
What's your morning routine? What time do you get up?
Depends on if I'm doing a podcast or not, actually. As I started my own podcast, so a lot of people are on the East Coast, and so I'm up at like 5:30 to do an interview. But otherwise, around 6:30.
And what do you do? Since you don't eat, do you work out?
You know, I'm not a morning workout person. I've never, my whole life, been able to say I'm going to wake up and I'm going to work out first thing in the morning. I know people wake up, they go to their spin class at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I just can't do that. I'd rather sleep an extra hour. But I will do that in the evening when I come back from work.
And I don't do it at night. I have to do it first thing. Yeah. Not at 5, but yeah. 7 o'clock is
everybody
my
has
my
theories
time.
On when's the best time to exercise. But I tell people the best time to exercise is
whenever
when you
do
exercise.
Yeah. Exactly. So what's your coffee recipe? What's your tea?
My coffee is usually just black. Once in a while, I might put a little splash of half and half in it, but I'll tell you what my coffee routine used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I used to put 2 Splendas and a generous amount of half and half in the coffee, literally a diabetes bomb, you know? And I thought, you know, this was like 5 years or more ago, that Splenda is better than sugar because that's what everybody says, so I'm going to do that. During this whole process of kind of revamping my own life, I said, you know, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this slowly. So I went from 2 Splendas to 1 Splenda, and then from 1 Splenda to no Splenda. And then I went from a moderate amount of half and half to a splash. And, you know, if I want to put a little splash in it as a treat once in a while, I'll do that. But I'm fine drinking black coffee now, and I actually grew a taste for espresso.
I drink espresso, and I do a capful of half and half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I try the coconut milk,
mm-hmm.
and I just don't love it.
It's not
too
the
sweet.
Same. Yeah.
No, touch a half and half. And it's organic.
Yeah.
So what is your last workout?
We have a Peloton, actually, at home.
Oh, good. Me too. I'll have to race you.
Yeah.
I don't do it very
fast. I still can't figure out how to work out with people together.
Oh, come on.
I know you can have friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you can't actually... You can coordinate them.
My kids do it. I haven't figured that out either. But you have kids. They'll help you figure it out. And what's the last book you read?
Well, I reread for the second time Dale Bredesen's book, The End of Alzheimer's. A large portion of our risk for Alzheimer's comes from lifestyle issues. And so we can prevent and in a lot of cases reverse some of the early inflammation and issues that are underlying Alzheimer's. And so it's a very awesome, fascinating book.
Mm.
So I read it twice.
Okay.
Really? If I read a book twice, then that means it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's only a few books that I've actually had to read two or three times even.
Do you read books that aren't medical books or self-help books or wellness books?
Yeah. I mean, actually—
Novels, fiction,
novels and fiction. It's been a little while since I had a book like that. But I read all kinds of topics. And I think that's kind of what helped me develop as a person and as a healer. I read books on child psychiatry. I'll read books on quantum theory, those are like the kind of the craziest ones. It's like, why are you reading about quantum theory? Like, I don't even understand necessarily half of it, but it's really funny because a lot of the stuff all ties in together. When you take some of those principles and you kind of boil them down and you read a book on transcendental meditation and then you go read a book on mindfulness and then you read a book on gut health, you kind of get this whole feeling of this theme. And over the last several years, I've probably done over 100 books or so from a wide variety of people. I read, you know, Yogananda's book, you know, Dave Asprey's books, all of Mark Hyman's books, all of these things kind of fascinating to me, and they all kind of help weave the picture of what the human life is about.
And when's your book coming out?
I have a book, the textbook of integrative gastroenterology, that actually just came out, the second edition. So that book that my wife made me read, forced me to read, that really brought me into this field, it's funny how that's actually the book that I ended up becoming an editor for in the end. So that same book now I redid with some of my colleagues, and we produced that just a couple weeks ago.
And I you sent it to me, and I'm going to dive into it. It's very, very in-depth.
You'll be the next gut health expert.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying. But I'm so happy that you came here to talk to me. I think you're fascinating, and I just think it's so cool what you have done personally for yourself and that you're on this journey to help all of us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.